Good afternoon, it's 3 o'clock and you are tuned in to KTOO News in Juneau here on Wednesday, the 29th of August, the year 2012. Jeff Snow with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll find out about Saturday's Portland Gold Spectacular with Aaron Elmore from Theatre in the Rough. And Twitch will be here to highlight the Alaska Native Language Program at UAS. Learn about this Saturday's skate contest, the Pipeline. And Cole and Phil Paramore will be here with info about Thursday's free drum clinic at the University of Alaska Southeast Rec Center. At Red Arizona, music and more today on a Juneau afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight, clear skies, patchy fog later on, low temperatures 35 to 43 degrees above zero. Forecast Thursday, mostly sunny skies with patchy fog in the morning. Thursday night, mostly cloudy skies with the low temperatures around 47 degrees.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Canada's Health Minister Leona Aglukkaq is in line to lead the International Arctic Council next year. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, she faces some challenges.
Aglukkaq is the first Inuk to ever be appointed to the federal cabinet. She herself is from the far north, Nunavut. Prime Minister Stephen Harper announced her appointment as Canada's chair of the Arctic Council this week. She's already the federal health minister, a significant portfolio, but says she will have no trouble balancing the two responsibilities. Aglukkaq says she's looking forward to working with other Arctic nations to promote Canada's interests.
The North, it's important for us as Northerners to participate meaningfully in the opportunities that are here. You know, development is very important, but at the same time, we also want to develop mining sectors, at the same time, preserve the environment and whatnot, but that has to be done with people in the North.
The Arctic Council is made up of 8 Arctic states, including Russia, Denmark, Finland, Norway, Sweden, Iceland, the U.S., and Canada. It's been criticized in the past for not including enough Inuit or Aboriginal people. Melting ice and the world's hunger for resources have made the Arctic a rich environment, and other countries such as China and those in the European Union are angling for a seat at the table as official observers. Some Aboriginal leaders also worry that if other countries join, they will dilute the voices of First Nations and Inuit groups who have permanent seats at the table, though no votes. Aglukkaq takes on her new role in 2013. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Most reservations on the Northern Plains are under a red flag warning. The hot temperatures could lead to dangerous fire conditions. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Tribal lands on the Northern Plains continue to bake this week. The fault lies with Hurricane Isaac hundreds of miles to the southeast. That system is stalling high pressure over the northern part of the country, leading to very hot, dry weather. Jeff Shield with the National Weather Service in Rapid City, South Dakota, says dry conditions and strong winds just need one spark to cause major damage.
For the grasses, we end up with, we call them a one-hour fuel. With the low humidity, they end up drying out very fast, makes them susceptible to fast ignition.
South Dakota's Rosebud Reservation had a major fire earlier this summer. About 40,000 acres burned in the July blaze. The Northern Cheyenne and Blackfeet reservations in Montana have battled fires as well. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbold.
The Karuk tribe declares a state of emergency and offers help to residents impacted by a wildfire. According to the Northern California tribe, the fire burning in the Klamath National Forest is creating a public threat in its ancestral territory. It's threatening the health and safety of people, property, and the environment. A mandatory evacuation has been implemented for some residents. The tribe is offering assistance in Happy Camp at its RV park for those who may not want to travel the 90 minutes to an evacuation center. And the tribe says there's additional space at its ranch. Celebrity golfers are taking part in the NB3 Challenge, hosted by Native American golfer Notabige III today at the Turning Stone Resort in New York. The charity tournament features 12 players, including Bige, Tiger Woods, and Ricky Fowler. The event, established by Bige, raises proceeds for his foundation, which uses sports, health, and leadership programs to fight type 2 diabetes among Native youth. At this year's tournament, East meets West as a mixed team of U.S. and Asian players compete, with a $450,000 winner's purse at stake. During this month in 1838, the first of 13 Cherokee detachments left under their own supervision from the southeastern United States to Indian Territory in Oklahoma. Previous groups had left under military supervision during the forced removal process by the U.S. government. According to the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma's Cultural Resource Center, about 14,000 Cherokee people were forced to walk or board boats for the trip. About 2,000 died of starvation, disease, and exposure. Their journey became known as the Trail of Tears. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kowanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. First guest is Aaron Elmore here to talk about McPeters Hall First Annual Friends of the Fourth and Gold Spectacular.
Good afternoon, Jeff.
Good afternoon. Thank you for coming down.
Betcha.
So this is the first annual.
It's the first annual. We thought we wanted to set up a chance for people to come and gather at the church sort of for fun on an every year basis. And the idea was to do it to show off how the place, how well it's all turned out. We'd long had this notion that the place was going to get used quite a bit, and it certainly has. And part of that notion was that when there was a performance on in one part of the building, in the old building, if there was a performance on somewhere, you could hear it all the way through the whole place, and there was no way to really do anything else. Even had old quiet conversations in another part of the building in order not to be heard. In the new place, we hoped that you might be able to do two performances at one time, one up in the sanctuary, one down in McPeters Hall. You could actually run a rehearsal down in the conference room slash rehearsal room all at the same time. We don't have a rehearsal schedule to happen in the conference room this time, but for the spectacular this Saturday at 7, we do plan to do two performances at exactly the same time. So if you want to come, and we hope you do, you'll be treated to two performances. You get to choose which one you want to go to, and then you'll have a chance to listen and see what goes on in one place. And then you'll have another chance to sort of mill around and bid on some desserts and visit with your friends, and then go see the other show. So we're going to do two shows twice simultaneously.
And this is raising funds to build finish building the kitchen.
Yeah, an Episcopal church without a kitchen is like a day without sunshine. That we need to have a place to make coffee and gather up the soup. And the kitchen at the old church was a tiny little sort of a shotgun shack, but two microwaves, one of which stopped working the day it was installed. I think we had an actor in our company who used to store her shoes in there because it was a convenient spot. We used to do a lot of quick changes to that kitchen. It won't have that cheap utility this time. It'll be just a real nice, small commercial kitchen, and it's one part of the building, one of the few parts of the building that's still yet unfinished. So what we thought, having this being the first annual, that every year we'd choose some sort of focus for where this money's going to go, and this is a nice opportunity for people to help build a place that's going to be used and really make the hall complete.
This is all happening Saturday, the 1st of September.
That's right, this weekend. We're going to do it once at 7 o'clock. We'll do these two shows. The shows will run about 45 minutes apiece, and you'll have plenty of time to mill around and see all the other bits and pieces of the building. Maybe if you haven't had a tour through there in a long time, you can see how things have moved along. We'll have some food for you, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Tell me about the shows, please.
The shows in the sanctuary, there will be a selection of Juneau's finest singers in a city that is just stuffed chock-a-block full with amazingly talented people. Dan Wayne has gathered a group of singers together, and I don't know if this is unprecedented, but it's certainly a lot of fun. It's certainly a chance not every singer gets. He opened it up and said, sing what you want. Sing what you really like. And so you're going to get a chance to hear these singers perform pieces that they really enjoy and have a chance to work up and have on step. That, I think, is going to be a real treat. And Theater in the Rough will be doing something at the same time. So we'll not get to see this, but Downstairs in McFeeters Hall, Theater in the Rough has put together a 45-minute agglomeration of things you probably haven't seen us do before. And we do plenty of plays, and we get a chance to... some people have had a chance to see the backstage areas. We're going to be able to take a moment to show you how we start to build a fight. That's something we're going to do. We'll have some combat demonstrations and do a little bit of that. We've got a series of short pieces we put together using masks and puppets and And then none of these things are things that we've really done before. They're not a review. So it'll be a lot of fun to see us in a mode that not many people have. And we're going to, finish up the whole works with a fashion show, which is also something we've never really done. But it'll be a fashion show chiefly of armor, of all things. So it will definitely have our twist.
A world premiere.
Yes, indeed.
And also dessert auction.
Yes, there'll be a dessert auction along there. We have as well. Returning by popular demand, we'll have Coffee in the Rough available to help build a new kitchen. It's probably worth mentioning this particular event goes towards a larger goal of raising money for the kitchen. There's also an opportunity for private donations made apart from this event to be matched dollar for dollar. There's a very generous anonymous donor who's offered the operation there $50,000, which is a good chunk for us. So any private donations that are given during this phase of the operation here will go towards that, and every single dollar suddenly becomes two, which is a great thing. So we have high hopes we can get this. I think lots of people have talked about the possibility of having Christmas dinner in the new kitchen. I think that may be a bit far-fetched, but Tricano's Construction is signed on to do the building. They're very much looking forward to that, and they do seem to think that we shouldn't have any trouble having a Valentine's Day feast in there. So,
but this Saturday is
this Saturday it's 7 o'clock. We're going to do it one time only. The first annual Friends of Fourth and Gold Spectacular.
And how much are tickets?
Tickets are $50 donation. And they're available at Hearthside Books at the Jack, and they're also available there at the church office at Fourth and Gold.
What's coming up around the bend for Theater in the Rough?
Theater in the Rough's planning our fall production of Macbeth. We've sort of turned over the whole season to that particular Shakespeare tragedy and an opportunity that came to us, and we weren't quite expecting, but we really liked. We wanted to do this play a lot. This play's been done in Juneau probably more than any other Shakespeare, funnily enough. We've never taken a whack at it. But Katie and I decided that Macbeth would be the thing this year. And then... we also have an opportunity to do a play about why Macbeth was written. It's a play called Equivocation. It's written by Bill Kane, and it was done originally at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, which is a place that Katie and I both sort of hold dear. It's kind of where we got our first taste of live theater. She, when she was 8, and me quite a number of years after that. But it's a touchstone for us. And this play is... brilliant and amazing sort of fantasia on the idea of why would this play get written. Into it gets folded the events surrounding the gunpowder plot, remember the 5th of November. It also gets folded in why governments do what governments do, because they do, and also why actors do what they do. So it's a great, towering thing. It's very funny and very powerful and marvelous piece. So two great pieces for us this year. Macker's, of course, coming up in the fall. We'll have a fair amount of bad behavior amongst the various characters, but they do end up fighting with swords a lot, and that's something we like.
And when is this coming up in the Hamlet?
We're going to open Macker's in October, the 26th, just in time for Halloween. We'll run it through November 18th. Equivocation comes up in the spring. We'll be running that in the month of March.
All right. Well, I've been talking to Aaron Elmore from Theater in the Rough about the first annual Friends of Fourth and Gold Spectacular this Saturday, September 1st. And it's a $50 donation to get in, and everything starts at 7 o'clock.
That's right.
Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
Just hope people get a chance. If the weather's fine, we'll keep the windows open. Thanks, Jeff.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, August the 29th, 2012. It's the birthday of the man who said, love is the master key that opens the gates of happiness, of hatred, of jealousy, and most easily of all, the gate of fear. How terrible is the one fact of beauty. That was Oliver Wendell Holmes, the poet and the physician, born in Cambridge in 1809, a friend of Emerson's, of Longfellow's, other Boston intellectuals, who helped to found the Atlantic Monthly magazine in 1857, and it was Holmes who came up with the name, famous for his poem Old Ironsides, and also for his collection of essays, The Poet at the Breakfast Table, in which he wrote, we are all tattooed in our cradles with the beliefs of our tribe. The record may seem superficial, but it is indelible. It was his son who was the Supreme Court Justice. This was Oliver Wendell Holmes Sr., who said, insanity is often the logic of an accurate mind overtasked. Good mental machinery ought to break its own wheels and levers if anything is thrust among them suddenly, which tends to stop them or reverse their motion. A weak mind does not accumulate force enough to hurt itself. Stupidity often saves a man from going mad. And it's the birthday of the man who said the actions of men are the best interpreters of their thought, John Locke, the philosopher, born in Somerset, England, 1632, who believed that all knowledge is derived from the senses and that we can know about morality with the same precision that we know about math, because we create our ideas. His essay concerning human understanding, published in 1688, a big hit all across Europe. Here's a poem for today by Julia Kasdorf, entitled Years From Now When You Are Weary. Years from now, when you are weary and worn out, wondering how you'll pay a bill or make the rent or meet a deadline set by some thoughtless boss, and kid, such days will come. Remember yourself at 5. Hair light from the sun or just from being young, new lunchbox pasted with butterflies, how you hung your backpack on a hook, then wouldn't let me take your picture on that first day of school, sending me out of that classroom to the car, to my job, where a pair of bats flapped in the hallway. Bats may be just bats, but one darted into my office quick as the boxer's head that bobs and weaves and never gets hit. It landed and hung from the drapes upside down as you hung in my body for a while. Bats are not the only flying mammals. That afternoon, in line for the bus, you cried, so tired you thought you'd fall asleep and miss your stop. Years from now, child, in some helpless dusk, remember that fatigue, but how you made it home to me anyway, in the care of a kind farmer bus driver. Recall that once I arrived late, your bus gone, and when I found you carefully seated by a coffee pot in a corner of a dim garage at the school bus lot, you just said, let's go, Mama. Don't tell anyone about this. A poem by Julia Kasdorf, Years From Now When You Are Weary, from her collection Poetry in America, published by University of Pittsburgh Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Tonight on 360 North, From square-rigged sailing ships propelled by the wind and the strength of men's arms to modern factory ships armed with technology heading north to Alaska, enjoy Pacific Northwest history in Centuries of Fish, Seattle's dynamic high seas fishing fleet. That's at 8, followed by the Alaska mining documentary Platinum Dreams at 9 and the Miller Center Forum at 10. It's a great way to look at Alaska tonight on 360 North and 360North.org.
Time is 3:19, 3:20, and you are tuned in to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guest is Lance Twitchell from the University of Alaska Southeast here to talk about the Alaska Native Language program they have going on there. Lance, thank you for coming down the station today.
Yeah, goodness cheese, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
First of all, could you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah. Tlingetrinach nea ya achsayi. Shukacha decha tzati. Shkut kwan dachayacha. University of Alaska Southeast, my name is Chone, or Lance Twitchell. I am Shukach Adi from the Chilkoot area, and I work at the University of Alaska Southeast as an assistant professor for Alaska Native Languages.
The Alaska Native Language Program is going on right now as we speak. Can you give us tell me about the program in general?
Yeah, sure. We have a number of classes in the Tlingit language. We have one class in Haida this semester that we're really excited about. We have a team of students that are really helping us to see what classes we could be developing. And really, we're just trying to boost our enrollment. We need to get more people involved in learning our languages to really turn this into a revitalization and not just something we continue to try and do or maintain or preserve, but, you know, we're really going to have to turn the tide with these languages if we're going to save them. You know, this next 20 to 30 years is going to tell us all about what our efforts are going to transform into. You know, we've got hundreds of years of attempts at eliminating these languages, and now we've got this pocket of time where we can really make a difference in the world and bring these languages back into use and into life, because they're necessary, they're important, they're medicinal, they're spiritual. They contain everything within the Tlingit culture, the Haida culture, and the Tsimshian culture, and they're beautiful things. And so we have a number of classes that we're running already. Introduction to the Tlingit language, which is a one-credit course. It's very non-threatening if anyone's afraid of language. It's 1 hour a week on Mondays from 4 to 5. And it's just a general introduction. Sounds, some games, some basic concepts. And it's a stepping stone if you feel like you need preparation before stepping into the full-time class, which would be for Tlingit, it's 105, AKL 105. That meets Tuesdays and Thursdays from 5:30 to 7:30. It's a four-credit class, you know, but all of our classes they're very welcoming and supportive. You know, you're not going to get graded on a real harsh scale. You're just going to get graded on showing up and doing the best that you can. And then this year we'll be running AKL 107, which is Elementary Haida, and it's also Tuesdays and Thursdays from 5:30 to 7:30. And we have a great young teacher we're real excited about, Ben Young. He's teaching from Indiana, you know, so you'll call into him where he's at. And we'll have a number of different speakers in different areas to try and get our Haida language program going. And then he's down there finishing up his degree. We have a new class this year that we're trying to really press. It's a stacked class, so there's two parts of it. One is called AKL 193 Section 1, and it's Tlingit for the Family and Home. Because one thing we noticed is students would go through our sequence of classes, but wouldn't necessarily go home and continue using the language. So one of the biggest obstacles for us is, how do we get the language back into the home? Because when people are speaking it in the home, to their babies, to their dogs, to each other, then you have a living, breathing language. And so this is a different approach where, you know, we'd love to have it in a small house, but that was something we couldn't find a way to do, but we'll transform that classroom into our own home. And so it's multi-generational, different levels of speaking, but the real key is, you know, how do you continue to use this in your house, from practical things like making little note cards that you put everywhere so you know how to say things, to just more of the philosophy type of things. How do you, every time you encounter mass media, you're going to be in an English-only environment, the odds are. And so we're going to be looking at those things, and that's stacked with a class that we're calling Clinket for the Dormant Speaker, which is, we have a lot of people who understand a lot of Tlingit and know a bunch of words, but just need a little bit of push to become regular speakers of the language. And so it's a different environment. What we saw is a year-long sequence with these two classes going at the same time. Those ones go at Friday from 5:30 to 7:30. It's a two-credit class. And we thought that by the end of the year, those dormant speakers would really be helping us to teach the younger folks and the more beginning-level speakers that were in there. So we're real excited about it. We're trying to get our numbers up so our classes don't get canceled. We're really trying to get the word out that the university is a great place to study language. Other classes we're running is AKL 193 Section 2 is Intro to Tlingit Reading, Spelling, and Transcription. And that's for people who can speak Tlingit, but they want to learn how to write it and to read it in the modern way that we've been using. And also people who just are interested in learning how to, like if they see something, like you go to the school, the middle school, in Lemon Creek, and it's Dantik Ehini, and it gets contracted to DZ all the time. And so you can know what to do when you encounter some Tlingit words and start to see some letters that are unfamiliar. There's also a third section, AKL 193 Section 3, which is Southeast Alaska Native Song and Dance, and that's Saturdays from 5 to 8 p.m. And there's a chance just to get some physical fitness and also to learn about Southeast Alaska Native cultures as far as song and dance performance goes. You're going to make your own drum in that class. You're going to learn songs. You're going to learn about protocols of songs, how to use them, when to use them, obtaining permissions. There's a lot of song composing that's going on now. We'll be talking about those types of things. And then we have some of our upper-level courses, AKL 205 Intermediate Tlingit, AKL 293, or AKL 401, which is an Alaska Language Apprenticeship and Mentorship Program. So if you have your language skills already, you can go forward, and this is more one-on-one time with a fluent elder and getting just more and more language use, because at some point you've got to get out of the classroom and get into the traditional realm of how people use the language who grew up with it, who have it as their first language. And then there's a class, AKL 493, Tlingit Conversation, Transcription, and Translation. So if you're already an advanced speaker or the upper-level intermediate speaker and you can understand what you're listening to, you can sit and watch conversations that have been recorded that are all in Tlingit, write them down, and translate them. It's a lot of fun to really roll up your sleeves and get into the language like that.
I'm talking with Lance Twitchell from the University of Alaska Southeast about the University of Alaska Southeast and Alaska Native Language classes. What makes learning a language like Tlingit different than learning Spanish or French?
Sure. Yeah, we've heard the argument that these languages might be outdated or there's no real-world application for them. And I think it's time to really start to break down the inherent racial superiority that exists behind that logic. So if we look at these languages for what they are, that's how we truly appreciate people with different cultures and the people whose cultures come from this particular place. If you want to speak Tlingit, you're speaking a language that has grown right here over the past 10,000 years. And there's something really special about that on a level of understanding what it means to live here. You're not just living in any place. You're living in a place that has this rich history, and it's much more than Gold Rush and things like that. And beyond that, you can take a look at some of the ways that these cultures functioned. What we see now is this transformation after hundreds of years of very violent contact. And now we can start to get back into it, and it'll help to break down stereotypes and barriers. You know, I often saw pictures of Tlingit people and other Native American people looking very tough and stoic or angry, or you see them in the movies and they're just angry. But if you learn our language, you see it's a language of love and relationships. And there's things that are just, you see the world differently when you learn these languages. And as far as indigenous knowledge, there's a ton that comes along with it. The late Oscar Coagley said, when we lose our languages, we lose our understanding and we start disrespecting the earth. And we start kind of messing things up. And so we can also take a look at some of the startling things that people have been talking about for a long time in certain communities and groups of people. You know, Native Alaskans, we have extremely, extremely high suicide rates. It's a leading cause of death among our youth. And, you know, and there are modern linguists now who are saying, well, you're committing linguistic suicide too, because you're walking away from your language. And it's a tough thing to look at, because we've got years and years and years of having it beaten into you that this is wrong or evil or that there's something inferior about it. When really, if you get into the Tlingit language, you get into the Haida language and the Tsimshian language, you're going to find languages that are just unbelievably complex and rich and beautiful, from concepts to notions of spirituality to understanding place and belonging. All these things are going to change if you just give yourself over to these languages. And I think you're going to find that these languages help you. You know, we always talk about, we got to save them. But the reality is, we've got to use them as the tools that they are to save our people, which are continuing to struggle today. You know, we're doing well in a lot of realms of finance and governance. But as far as you get down to that spiritual level, where people are still at a loss, and the late Walter Soboloff said, people who know who they are don't kill themselves. And in the language, you start to see that. You learn how to speak more carefully. You learn that what you say is your bond. It's something that you know, you're tied to words, you're tied to names, you're tied directly to your ancestors. Through the language, they can hear you and communicate with you. And, you know, and it's just tremendous fun. You know, you can say, I came here and I studied Tlingit, or I live here and I study Tlingit, and there's nowhere else in the world that I can do this. You know, you can study Spanish and French. You can study the colonial languages that have gone around the world and sort of pushed themselves into place and pushed other things out. But you can be part of a movement that says, you know what, we can look at all this stuff and we can start to make things better. We can operate in a way that we understand that we're physically going to change the world and we're going to help people out.
What opportunities are out there for people to refine their Alaska Native language skills?
Yeah, you know, so there's in class, we've got to get outside as well. And so at the community level, there's a pretty small group that's working in the language. We're always looking to expand that. And so we're fortunate we've got it in many of the school systems. Often it's a struggle. You know, that's something that might get cut. But the biggest thing is getting it back into your house. You know, so what we're trying to encourage students of the language to do is to find times where they can just shift their understanding of how the world functions and live in the language. And so we're going to start some language circles. Those will be published around town in various ways, but we're looking at probably Saturday afternoon language circles, and also one or two times maybe during the week where we can have students sit around a table and just have a chance to interact in it. Because when I really started to understand how things shift was when I started going to Tlingit language immersions, where we'd go for 10 days at a time out at Glacier Bay, out in Chilkoot Culture Camp. And at the end of these 10 days, you know, it was amazing how much we had shifted, you know, both as far as our understanding of language, our understanding of ourselves and each other. And it got to the point where at the last day, we'd always give our closing speeches. And I was standing up and I was trying to figure out how to say something in Tlingit. And when I sat down, I realized that my teachers were finishing my sentences for me. So they knew how I was thinking and what kinds of things I was talking about. And it was just an amazing time. And I saw that there's something there that we can recreate that I think this place is hungry for.
I'm talking to Lance Twitchell from the University of Alaska Southeast. Where can people get more information about the native language classes in the program in general, Lance?
Yeah, you can always go to the University of Alaska's website, uas.alaska.edu. You can contact the registrar's office at 796-6100 or 877-465-4827. You can always get a hold of me at the university. It's L.A. Twitchell, T-W-I-T-C-H-E-L-L, at uas.alaska.edu.
Lance Twitchell, thank you for coming down. Is there anything like that I might have forgotten to ask?
We just really want to see people come in. We want to see organizations as well. You know, if you're an organization or you're involved with the leadership of an organization, it doesn't have to be just Native organizations. You know, I've heard some people say, hey, that's for ANCSA corporations to solve, when really we all inherit this situation. You know, anyone who lives on this land is somehow tied into the fate of these languages, either historically or currently. And so if you're involved in an organization or if you're an individual, you can sponsor students, you can sponsor classes, you can help us out. You know, we're always trying to figure out the next solution for this. There's the newly forming Alaska Native Language Preservation Council for the state of Alaska, which is perhaps the first of its kind as far as something existing at the state government level that specifically looks at that. And if people are supporting this and giving money and time and effort, you know, if you don't agree with it, just don't say anything about it. You know, we're really struggling, and all of those little comments that try and say, it's not something that helps people today, or it's not something that, you know, something that has just evolved over time that we've moved away from it. It hasn't evolved. It was genocide, and so now we're trying to fix those things, but we're trying to do it in a positive way. So if you don't have positive things, you know, just go focus on something else. But if you are interested, there's so much good that you could be doing here. If you're an organization, you could sponsor classes, you could sponsor individuals, and you could say, you know what, we saw this problem, and we just stepped up, and we tried to fix it.
Thanks, Rachel. Thank you for coming by. Right.
Thanks so much.
They were building a school in the Lemon Creek Valley. It was kind of a middle school, not too far from the jail or the landfill. And they thought long and hard about what they might call it. There were many suggestions, proposals, proponents, opponents, but only one of them was chosen, and some hard words were spoken, not the least of which was Suntikahini. They called it Suntikahini. Suntikahini. They called it Suntikahini. Now Zunti is the flounder, and heen is fresh water, a stream or a river. The K apostrophe in the middle is diminutive, and the I at the end is possessive, the little water of the flounder. Zuntikahini, they called it Zuntikahini. Suntikahini, they called it Suntikahini. But it seems that our culture is disrespectful of flounders, because lately to flounder means to flip-flop, stumble, and blunder. But if I were to Zunti, I wonder just what would that be? Yes, if I were to Zunti all over the floor, would you still love me? Would you call out for more? Zunti, 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 Zunti Kahini. They called it Santikahini. Santikahini. Santikahini.
Local resident John Palms, if you need more information about that song or John Palms in general, check out his website at www.johnpalms.org. JohnPalms.com.
Spirit of Youth celebrates teenage Alaskans who are making our communities better places to live. They give their time, their hearts and minds, their passion, their creativity. Now, hear their stories.
Rob German is the Assistant Chief of Emergency Medical Services for the Tri-Valley Fire Department out of Healy. He says a while back he noticed volunteers on the EMS side of the department were starting to dwindle, so he says that got him thinking about kids.
I brought up the idea of bringing in the youth, going into the school and actually doing an ETT course during their intensives. And at the end of the 2 weeks, they took their test, they passed it, they showed interest in the fire department, started going to the meetings.
Since that time, German says a growing group of enthusiastic and well-trained teenagers has practically revitalized the fire department.
These guys have a lot of energy. They bring a lot of life to the fire department, which is contagious to the older people. And in the back of the ambulance, they're a huge help.
Shelby Townsend is 17, and she was one of the first young people to get involved. She, like her peers, is an emergency trauma technician. She says being prepared, having a pager, and going out on calls, it's all fun and exciting.
So does the pager go off any time of day, like even if you're asleep at night on a school night?
I have gone on a call that was maybe 1 in the morning on a school night. It was for a fire.
So did you go to school in the morning?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
So then, you know, if you're tired or falling asleep in class, could you use that as an excuse? Like, hey, I was on a fire call last night. It's like 4 in the morning.
We actually use an excuse for school. Like, hey, we were saving lives last night. What we say a lot. We're out saving lives.
I'm Shanna Sheehy.
Give a young person you know a boost by recognizing the good things they're doing. Nominate at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Alaska State Division of Behavioral Health.
Thank you.
Modern Mandolin Quartet from their brand new album, Americana.
Juneau's 5th Annual Local Food Festival is at the Jack this Saturday, 9 to 2. Enjoy fun workshops, food and drink samples, fresh organic produce, and more. Visit the Ask the Expert corner, where local gardeners will be available to answer questions. Juneau's Local Food Festival, brought to you by the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council and the Juneau Economic Development Council. It's fun and free for the whole family. Stop by at the Jack this Saturday, 9 to 2. Take me down to Juneau's farm.
Time is 3:46 and you are tuned in to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guests are here to talk about the Mike Johnson Free Drum Clinic, which is going on this Thursday at 6 p.m. at the UAS Student Rec Center. Cole Paramore and Phil Paramore, thank you for coming by the station today.
Well, thank you, Jeff. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Tell me about Mike Johnson, please, if you could, please, Cole.
Yeah, so basically Mike is a drum teacher. He's been a private drum instructor for many years. And then recently, he's started doing online lessons. So the deal with that is he'll post a number of free drum lessons on YouTube. So it might be like a 5 to 10 minute clip of him teaching something. And then he also has paid services. So you can go and you can buy a wide variety of similar videos. Or the big thing he does is he does live streaming lessons. So you can watch a lesson he gives live. It's a full 30-minute lesson. And then because it's happening, you know, live, you can actually use a chat room to ask him questions. So you can actually have the interactivity of a real drum lesson, but it's all online. And then, of course, he's coming here for a clinic. So he's also a clinician. He's toured around, I think, pretty much all over the U.S. This past year doing clinics.
The clinic is at 6 o'clock this Thursday. It's free. Who is the clinic for?
The clinic is for anyone and everyone, really. Mike is, it's for all ages, all skill levels, and it's not even necessarily just for drummers. Definitely all musicians will enjoy it, and even non-musicians. I have a lot of friends who went to the clinic he did last year and really, really enjoyed it. He's just a very personable guy, very, you know, funny. It'll be an enjoyable experience for anyone that comes, and if you're a drummer in town, I mean, there's no excuse. You have to be there for sure.
Tell me more about his teaching style, Phil.
The thing that impressed me most about Mike, I guess, is he's incredibly positive and of course, very energetic and very enthusiastic, and I don't understand it that well because I'm not very musically inclined at all, but he developed a method called linear drumming, and Cole can tell you more about that, but I think he wrote a book about linear drumming, and he uses that method in his teaching style, and the comments that I got after last year's clinic were that people understood things in a way they hadn't understood before, and he has a lot of knowledge about the industry as well. It's not just about drumming, it's about music, it's about the relationship of the beat to the melody and all the other aspects of music that go together to form the whole package. And then the other thing about him is he's really open. A lot of dialogue with the audience. People can, I think, got up and he allowed people to do some demos. Mm-hmm. Very hands-on very practical in his approach. And then, of course, question and answer afterwards, and very congenial, really, really nice guy.
Cole, tell me more about the linear thinking.
Yeah, so the linear deal is it's not like a teaching method per se or like a style or anything, and it's really all it means is when you're drumming, you're playing with several limbs at once, so often you'll hit two drums at the same time, and so linear drumming is just a method of only hitting one thing at a time. So you might hit your right hand, then your left hand, then your right foot, then your right hand, then your left hand, then your right foot. You can do that much more quickly than if you were to hit maybe multiple limbs at the same time. So it's not really a teaching thing for him. It's just an idea, and it's something that he's developed in his book. It's just a subject that he's explored pretty thoroughly. But as far as the teaching goes, his real specialty is just breaking things down in a really, really accessible way. A lot of the time, I'll see drum instructors or there'll be, you know, clinicians or something, and what they're talking about, you kind of get an idea of what they're saying, but it's very, like, it's like the kind of thing where the moment you leave and they stop talking, it stops making sense. You kind of forget what they said. It didn't, you know, it was ambiguous or vague. He's very good at really, really breaking things down in a very understandable way. And that's one of the reasons it's so great for non-drummers to come in is he just breaks everything down so well that even if you're not a drummer, you still have an idea of what he's talking about.
And Lester, you taught a similar class?
Yeah, exactly. He came in, I think, maybe a few months earlier last year.
Right, and then the other thing he did last year was, and he's going to do again this year, Brian Van Kirk is gracious enough to lend us a drum kit from Thunder Mountain High School. And so on Friday morning after the clinic, Michael go in and sit in with the band at Thunder Mountain and help them break things down and give them some pointers and some tips. And so it's a little bit of a reciprocal relationship that goes on there as well. So thanks to Brian Van Kirk for that.
Mm. And this workshop at the clinic is coming up this Thursday at 6 o'clock, and it's free. What should people bring? They shouldn't bring the whole drum set with them.
Right. No, and that's actually what's great is I've had a few people ask me, you know, what should I bring? Do I bring sticks or whatever? You don't have to bring anything. If there's interactivity, you'll either go up and play or you'll watch, or there's a lot of stuff that you can do on your hands and knees. So much of drumming is coordination based that you don't necessarily need to actually have sticks or an entire drum set. So you just that's what's so great is free pizza. It's a free clinic. All you do is show up. You just show up and watch.
How should people prepare? Should they watch the videos online?
You can go online and take a look at Mike and just see what he's all about, get it up. But there is really no preparation necessary. Come as you are, bring your hands and your feet and a good attitude, and I assure you have a good time. Juno Pizza is supplying pizza, so we're going to have pizza and refreshments. And, I'm excited about Mike being here and just want to really encourage anybody. And don't think of it as a drumming clinic. Think of it as an opportunity to have a great time and learn something about music and enjoy yourself.
And really to see someone who's in the top of his field right now. We very, very infrequently, Juno gets these kinds of people that are really in the top of their class or the top of their field just because we're such a small town. And we're really lucky to have had him last year and then again this year. So it's great for anyone just to see, you know, someone who's at the top of their game. And it's, you know, it's all free. It doesn't get better than that. You know,
right.
That kind of stuff just doesn't happen.
The free pizza part is especially intriguing to me.
we're hoping that'll intrigue many people.
Well, Juno Pizza jumped right on board, and they said they're going to bring a bunch of food, and we're the rec center's providing the refreshments, and it's going to be very casual, and it's going to be really nice.
Now, how long will it last?
I think total time. I mean, we'll probably hang out a little bit, have them talk. The whole event starts at 6. Probably start actually drumming at maybe 6:15, and then his clinic will be between an hour and 2 hours.
And if people don't know where the rec center is, how do they get there?
11120. No, it's actually the address is not as relevant as if you go to, it's up from DeHart's on the Back Loop Road. If you were driving up the Back Loop Road from DeHart's, you would pass the bus barn on your left, and then the next left is a road that takes you directly to, it's the joint use facility, Army National Guard and UAS Student Recreation Facility. If anybody has any questions at all, I've gotten several calls lately. I have a fourth grader who's interested. Is that appropriate? Oh, yeah, absolutely. I have an 8-year-old who's really into drumming. Is it okay if they come? Absolutely. Bring them on. And, that road will take you right to the rec center. If you have any questions, Phil Paramore at 796-6545, and I'll be glad to answer any questions that you have or give you any information that you might need about the event.
All right, Phil Paramore and Cole Paramore, thank you very much for coming down. Anything you'd like to add, I might have forgotten to ask.
What do you think, Cole?
I don't think so. Just, I implore everyone to really take advantage of an opportunity that doesn't present itself that often in this town.
Okay, so, yeah, I second that motion.
All right, thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks.
Oh. program is brought to you by the Silver Bow Bakery, now selling its signature products at Super Bear, including hummus, flavored cream cheese, flatbreads, energy crisps, and bagel chips, as well as ready-to-bake cookie dough. The Silver Bow Bakery, now available at Super Bear.
Time is 3:58 and you are tuned in to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also broadcast on these translators. In the Valianoc Bay Area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1, K220BT Sarsuna at 91.9, and in Exclusion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. Tomorrow, 3 on a Juneau afternoon, we'll talk with Bill Reagan about the House of Wickersham. We'll also get our appetites ready for the local food festival. And Anthony Turney will be giving us a rundown on art happenings in the capital city during Arts Up. It is Almanac Music and more tomorrow, 3 on a Juneau afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight, there's a frost advisory from 4 a.m. till 6 till 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. Mostly clear skies expected tonight with patchy fog later on near the water. Patchy frost early, mainly in the Mendenhall Valley later on. Forecast for Thursday, sunny skies with patchy fog near the water and patchy frost mainly in the Mendenhall Valley in the morning. Friday, partly cloudy skies with patchy fog and high temperatures around 58 degrees. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Thank you for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon today and have a great evening.
You still have those of us who are a little more moderate. You have the very conservative people. You have those who are really ideologically conservative in the Tea Party.
Moderates search for their place at the Republican convention.
For Wednesday, August 29th, it's All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Audie Cornish. Coming up, conservatives are enjoying the convention spotlight, but moderate Republicans there say they want to beef up their rank.